Hello, and welcome to this week's program. I'm Paul Nelson. With a recent rash of high school shootings, many Americans wonder about the source of all the violence in our society. Certainly for a problem this complex, there can't be one single source. Gloria DiGaetano can cite a 1-2 combination that leaves dead and maimed high school students in its wake. Gloria is a media literacy activist and author. Her new book is Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, a call to action against TV, movie, and video game violence. Gloria says, first, kids get desensitized to violence by watching so much on TV. Then, they hone their killing skills on violent video games. Her sources for this information include some of the best social scientists in the world, including Dr. Brandon Centerwall of the University of Washington.
Dr. Centerwall is an epidemiologist, and so he looks at trends over long periods of time. And in looking at why the murder rate changed in South Africa over an extended period of time, he didn't think it would be television that would be the significant factor. As a matter of fact, when he arrived at the fact that more than, he thinks, 50% of the rapes and murders and assaults in our country are directly caused by television violence.
That information surprised him. But violent video games only fill a need in these children that is not being met by society.
Several studies indicate that boys and girls who play video games, violent ones, are kids who are without a sense of place, without a sense of self-worth, without a sense of being connected to something bigger than themselves. These children are usually alienated at some level, or they feel alienated from their peers or from their family members.
And she says literacy and building the imagination is the antidote. Gloria DiGaetano is onto something. And if you are concerned about the violence in our society, then this program is for you. This is information you won't get from television. I hope you enjoyed today's program. Thanks for tuning in. Every January, America stops what it is doing to watch a football game that almost never lives up to the hype. This year, why not take a pass on the pigskin and check out the third annual Super Bowl of Poetry, presented by the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in Auburn, Washington. The event will feature a workshop Saturday, January 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. called The Current State of Poetry, with a performance and writing workshop hosted by Jack and Adele Foley of Oakland, California. On Super Bowl Sunday, January 30th, Jack and Adele will highlight a roundtable discussion on poetry and a reading, also from 2 to 5 p.m., along with Oregon poet Sharon Dubiago, Robin Schultz, and Nico Vasilakis of Seattle. More information is available at www.splab.org. The event is made possible in part by the King County Arts Commission and the Washington State Commission for the Humanities. The third annual Super Bowl of Poetry on January 29th and 30th at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab. Another village building project of It Plays in Peoria Productions. You can tell the ideals of a nation by its advertisements. If that statement is true, then what do the ads in game magazines say about America? Here are a few examples. Fatalities can be the best part of Mortal Kombat, or as easy as killing babies with an axe, or more fun than shooting your neighbor's cat. And finally, there is the game Street Fighter, which proclaims, "The killer in me is just beginning." What do these ads say about Americans? Are we desensitized to violence? Are violent TV shows and video games rewiring our children's brains, making them less able to reason or have compassion? Is this society sick if our kids find fun in terminating life? We have seen the enemy, and he is us, is how Pogo once put it. But perhaps the TV and video game industries have some culpability in this matter. Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, a call to action against TV, movie, and video game violence, is the latest salvo against the culture of violence that TV and video games nurture, much to the misery of the parents and siblings of shooting spree casualties. It is a book co-authored by Gloria DiGaetano, a nationally recognized educator in the field of media violence and our guest today on the program. Welcome back to the show, Gloria.
Thank you. It's really good to be here, Paul.
It's been a long time. It's been a couple of years now.
I think so, yes. Uh-huh.
We have our own place now.
Yes, it's very different.
Yeah, and it makes things a lot easier. You know, we may have covered this in past interviews, but I'd like to get a sense of how you began to make media literacy your life's calling. Being a parent is part of that, I'm sure.
Yes, being a parent is a big part of it, but being an educator is the biggest part, too. Seeing what teachers had to deal with in the classroom in the late 80s, in 1985, 1986, and finally in 1987, I left my work in Issaquah School District, where I was an administrator for 9 years before that, and decided to do this work full-time because I came to the conclusion that we aren't going to progress either with public education, private education, or with helping our children become more literate or more able to think unless we confront the influence of overuse and misuse of media and visual screen technologies.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with trying to site new schools in the Issaquah District that made you quit, huh?
Right. No, at that time they weren't building new schools. They didn't have the problems they have today.
Yeah, well, you got out, and it's great work that you've done. It's just amazing.
Thank you.
And we really appreciate the quality of your work. And the quality of the new book as well. And the fact that it's short, I also appreciate that personally. Thank you very much. It's really easy to read.
It's a manifesto-type book. It was designed to be short, to synthesize research and to be very hard-hitting in terms of saying, here are the facts, here's the research we've known, here's how it affects kids, and here's what you can do about it.
I've really been spoiled by the poetry because that experience really makes you want to boil things down to its essence. And you really have, and congratulations on the new book.
Oh, thank you very much.
How did you get hooked up with your co-author, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman?
Oh, Dave Grossman wrote a wonderful book in 96 called On Killing that I came across. And in the last chapter of that book, he talks about how violent video games are very similar to the military training devices that are used to train people to kill. So I contacted him, and he had my book, Screen Smarts, A Family Guide to Media Literacy, and I was saying some similar things. And then Dave is from Jonesboro, and when the massacre happened in Jonesboro, we got together and said, we need to write this book.
Excellent. On page 7, there is a fact which you cite, and it suggests media violence primes children to see killing as acceptable. Now, when you throw out that kind of language, we expect some serious research to be backing it up. And are there scads and scads of research out there?
There's 3,500 studies that have been done since the early 50s on how children and teens become more aggressive or more desensitized about regular real-life suffering when they are exposed to media violence. And they do come to imitate it or at least see it more acceptable. Later on in the book, we talk about, you know, the fact that there are 160,000 children every day, for instance, that don't go to school because they're afraid of being beat up by a bully. Now, this is the kind of violence, this is the kind of malignant violence that doesn't get into the crime statistics, but that every parent and every teacher knows that we're dealing with on a big scale here.
Yeah, this is the fact that a kid might get sick, stay out of school, might throw up, all this stuff doesn't go into the statistics, and yet is a very real part. I mean, nightmares. We don't take stock of how many nightmares a kid has, but that's a very real part of one's life.
That's right, and Dr. Joanne Kanner at the University of Wisconsin has done major studies on children's fright reactions, and I quote her book in this book, Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill. And very interesting. Many children exhibit symptoms like PTSD, or they're hospitalized for 6 to 8 weeks after seeing a traumatic event on television.
PTSD being post-traumatic stress disorder, similar to what Vietnam veterans have, many of them.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's go back to the 1950s. TV itself can be such an educational tool, and yet You suggest that TV changed somewhere in the middle of the 1950s when the network stumbled upon the violence formula. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, I stumbled on that several years ago in researching my book Screen Smarts. The fact is that the American public were not glued to the tube with educational kinds of programming or programming that would inspire the executives, put their heads together. The advertisers didn't like this. They wanted to keep people there. And people will be attracted to what is distorted or different from their normal surroundings. So when The Untouchables came in around 1956, that was very different. And it had a degree of violence that at that time was almost shocking for the American public at the time. And so they watched it. And Gunsmoke followed a few months later, and that became a way to attract us. And what I talk about is how it attracts us from our low brain areas, from our unthinking and our curiosity about death and suffering. And then, of course, what happens is that we become so used to the visual images of horror, then they always have to become greater and greater. The images have to escalate in order for people to attend to them. In 1939, when Gone with the Wind came out, for instance, we wouldn't even fathom in our cultural consciousness, we couldn't even have a collective idea about a movie like Natural Born Killers. It wouldn't have occurred to anybody to make a movie like that. But gradually, ever so gradually, we keep changing the boundaries of what is civil until we get these kinds of ads for video games now that are supposedly entertainment for children.
Well, like any good addict, we need higher doses. And that's something you talk about in the book and something we'll certainly touch upon, I hope, as the time goes by. We're talking with Gloria DiGaetano, the co-author of Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, a call to action against TV, movie, and video game violence. I'm Paul Nelson. Let's talk a little bit about Dr. Brandon Centerwall. Should be a household name. He's not. He wanted to find the reason why the murder rate was doubled in the United States between the 1950s and the 1980s, originally working at the Centers for Disease Control and then here in our backyard at the University of Washington. And the fact that his research is not widely available is also very interesting. So let's put it that way. But tell us about Dr. Centerwall and some of his work.
Dr. Centerwall is an epidemiologist, and so he looks at trends over long periods of time. And in looking at why the murder rate changed in South Africa over an extended period of time, he didn't think it would be television that would be the significant factor. As a matter of fact, when he arrived at the fact that more than, he thinks, 50% of the rapes and murders and assaults in our country are directly caused by television violence. And now, this is a professor. He's a psychiatrist. He teaches at the University of Washington Medical School and an epidemiologist. He is saying this. His major study was reported in the American Medical Association's journal in 1992. Not many people know about it, but to say if we knew that something was causing 50% of people's, you know, violent behavior and it wasn't television, it probably would have been announced by now.
Yeah, it needs to be stopped. We need to go out there and stop it before it kills again. But, of course, TV is not going to report that because it's against its own interest, its own self-interest. In fact, when we look at the history of television and the FCC, you talk about the head of the FCC in the early 60s who looked at a week of television and said, this is a vast wasteland. This was in 1961, was it not?
That's right.
And then 20 years later, the then head of the FCC, Mark Fowler, did the same thing. He watched a week of TV, and he didn't find it to be a vast wasteland, but a vast richness is what he found. He went on to say that TV is like a toaster with pictures.
Exactly, and that's a huge media literacy joke, that the television is not just another appliance, obviously. But in 1981, when Mark Fowler said that, he ushered in a whole era in which we deregulated the television industry, so that by 1984, 85, and there we then got cartoons for children that were sponsored by toy companies, so the cartoon became a half an hour or an hour commercial. And just today's paper, the East Side Journal, has Robert Egbert talking about Pokemon movie being a two-hour commercial. And that's what it is.
Yeah. Basically a pawn of the industry. The head of the FCC was at that time, and to a certain extent is still a pawn of the industry. Is that accurate?
There are different kinds of heads, and the one we have now, I think if you emailed him or called him, at least he's going to be a little bit more responsive than Fowler was. Newton Minow, of course, has written a book about television that several years ago, and he's very concerned. And he was the one in the 61 that said it was a vast wasteland. Now he's concerned for his grandchildren, and he's written articles about that.
Yeah. To follow that up, the rates of violence since TV was deregulated and since the cartoons became basically program-length commercials for toy manufacturers, sales of violent toys went way up. The violence on TV went way up. A lot of statistics in the book that back that up.
Yes.
As a direct result of deregulation.
That's right. That's right. We could get many, many more toys that were violent, and now the Power Rangers, a more recent program, averages about 200 acts of violence per hour, whereas the cartoons for children in the early 80s averaged 25 acts of violence per hour. And just in perspective, adult prime time television averages 5 violent acts per hour.
Yeah, because with adults you have sex to be able to, to lure the viewers
well,
with.
One of the things, Paul, that I talk about in my lectures and my conferences that I do across the United States and Canada, and this analogy is not in the book, but I think it's an important one. If people turned on their television sets and saw commercials that we were selling products with, let's say, Pepsi or whatever, by this horrific horror and violence and chainsaws and axes and blowing up and splattered limb crunching, and that's the way we were selling products, people would be really upset, and the commercial industry could not get away with it. Now, but we keep it as entertainment for our children, when in fact, if we were trying to sell products like that, if people were trying to do that over the airwaves, most Americans would not tolerate it.
They would demand that it be stopped immediately.
That's right.
Yeah, we're also seeing effects in second generation, third generation effects of growing up on TV. Parents who have shorter fuses with their kids, who are quicker to act violently towards them, which is interesting. I mean, you know, there's one trend of sensing that hitting a kid is never right. But on the other hand, you have these kids raised on violence who don't have the cognitive function and are quick to blow a fuse and to smack their kids around.
And that's true. In our book, Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, we cite a 22-year study that followed 875 adults from the time they were about 8 years old till into their late 20s, early 30s. And what was found was that those kids who watched a lot of violence before the age of 8 or around the age of 8 became adults who were much more likely to be abusive to their children or spouses or to be arrested for a crime.
Yeah. To really get a sense that TV is culpable for this violence, there was a study done before and after TV was introduced into a community. No-tell.
That's right.
Was that the name of the community, or did
no.
they just call it afterwards?
No, yeah. They just called it that. There were three towns. There was Telly, Television, Uni, Tell, and No-Tell. So they could distinguish the three.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, the Tanis Macbeth Williams went into this remote Canadian town, and 2 years before television was introduced, she and her colleagues did extensive research looking at children's reading scores, their rates of violence, their aggressiveness, adults' aggressiveness, what adults did, didn't do in their community. After 2 years after the television was introduced, they went back. And they compared, and they found rates of violence increasing across the board for all ages and for adults, for girls as well as boys. The children who were younger fared worse, and what one of her conclusions in her studies that I think is very interesting for parents to note is that when children are in the process of learning a skill, like the 7-year-old's reading, they were more negatively impacted by television than a child who's 12 who already has the skill intact and is reading. So she looked not only at violence, but also the behaviors, learning behaviors that had changed also.
That's very interesting. All the studies have been on tobacco, showing how dangerous that is. and tobacco's efforts to, you know, squash those studies, to harass whistleblowers and what have you, it's all beginning to come out now. And you liken the TV executives to the tobacco industry executives. When given the overwhelming evidence of their culpability in the culture of violence in America, they've chosen to increase the violence.
Exactly. It's so parallel. And as people would go through that chapter in the book where we keep talking about the research, and then I wanted to construct it so it would be like a story, and now here's what happened with the industry. They keep upping the level of violence the more we know. The AMA came out in 1976 and said television violence is a risk factor threatening the health and welfare of all of its citizens. And yet violence kept escalating. And so we had the 1998 television violence study, a culmination of 3 years of study of television violence with 9 contextual features. So they saw that, you know, if people are a little more empathetic, then maybe the violence isn't as harmful. And they looked at 9 different kinds of features like that. And if it's too sadistic violence, if you're using a gun, if you're using a knife, all kinds of things. And they came and reported that television violence increased 67% over a, you know, a 3 or 4 year period. And it increased mostly for children's programming. Now, most people don't know this, and that's what happens. And now we're getting the same kind of response from this book. We keep changing the argument back to, well, does it hurt children, instead of looking at what are we going to do about it. We know it's harmful, but we keep getting a polarized debate in the social milieu or out there in the media, and that takes all the energy away from, hey, what can we do about this? Because this is a problem, but it's a problem with real solutions.
Well, the solution suggested so far is the V-chip. What are your thoughts about
that?
Well,
the V-chip can only work if parents are going to insert it and use it and know it. And I think it's an okay thing, but I don't think, as an educator, for me, the long haul is educating people about the fact that we, as a society, are playing a very dangerous game by allowing our children to use images of horror and brutality as ways to feel pleasure and satisfaction.
So why not kill your television?
Well, you know, that's another answer, and some people do that.
Elvis.
Right. It will come back to haunt you because we're in a media age and we can't escape it. Children who grow up without television usually become people who watch some television as they get older. My stance is we need to be literate. We need to be media literate about what's on the television and obviously reduce the amount of time. If Americans, again, were doing any other activity 4 or 5 hours a day, letting their children ski for 5 hours a day every day for 18 years of their lives, we'd say this is a problem. Even reading 5 hours a day, no one would tolerate that for the cumulative amount of childhood years. So we have to take a look at our addiction to screen technologies, I think. I think we're in big denial.
Because in short, according to the book, you suggest that media violence desensitizes us, addicts us, and makes us more fearful.
Mm-hmm. And the younger the child, the more those effects can be seen.
Yeah. Tell us about the fear aspect of it.
Well, a lot of children will have night terrors or nightmares, reoccurring kinds of images, because the emotional image is what will really imprint itself. We know ourselves when we see something very graphic or gory, like Schindler's List even, something that is very compelling. And the more emotionally laden the visual image is, the more the child then will see it over and over in his or her head and replay it. And sometimes, as parents, we don't know what they're going to think is scary. The killing of Bambi's mother in the opening scenes of the movie Bambi is very frightening to some young children. So we've got to be aware of that and know that. I was coming back from a lecture tour, and I was in the airport, and I saw a little girl maybe 2 or 3 years old, beautiful blonde little girl who just happened to glance at the television and see CNN was putting a trailer on for the Millennium Years, and there were all these skeletons and horrific images of dead bodies and skeletons, and it came on maybe 20 seconds. Her father was faced the other way. He did not see what she was seeing, and she was there staring. And then she looks over at me, and her eyes were just bugged out. And there's that incidental, you know, taking in of these images that we don't have control over with any V-chip. And the parent is unaware. If that child can't sleep tonight, he's not going to know why.
Yeah. That bug-eyed expression, that's part of the physiological reaction that happens to watching violence.
Yes.
You talk about that in the book.
We talk a lot about that because the physiological reaction is the first reaction from a violent image rather than a thinking reaction. Visual images of violence and of sexuality change us on a physiological basis before we actually think through that image. So what is the vulnerability here is that children can actually get hooked after a time when the brain gets changed in terms of saying, hey, this is making me feel excited. These images are giving me a feeling, a sensation of excitement, or maybe pseudo-aliveness, if you want to call it. But their endorphins are running by, and now we as a society are saying, well, these violent images are your pleasure. They are your entertainment. You're supposed to be satisfied by them. And this is a very dangerous thing. This is a conditioning response here where we are associating then, helping the child associate not only in their brain chemistry, but also in their nervous system and through role modeling that it's fun to watch people hurt each other.
Oh, that's really sick. You know, I saw the X-Files movie, and I went in, and I'd heard good things about the TV show, though I don't watch TV. I had to leave the movie early because I was so shocked by it.
I think you're too sheltered, Paul. You better watch the TV program.
The X-Files, and then I left early, and I can't get that out of my mind.
Yes.
It's just very graphic. I can't take that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for parents who can't take it either and want to do something about it, they can get in touch with Grow Smart Brains, can't they?
Yes, they can. And actually, if people do email me through my website, if they go to my website, www.growsmartbrains.com, and say they heard me on your show, Paul, I will send them a free copy of a book, either this book or my other book, Screen Smarts, depending on how far they last.
All right. How about a phone number,
too? I give away 10 copies with each of my appearances. A phone number they can reach me at is 206-654-2994.
Gloria DiGaetano is our guest. She's the co-author of Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, a call to action against TV, movie, and video game violence.